do you think of the State of the Union? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, January 13th. We will have an extended big question segment this morning. And from now through 8 o'clock this morning, we will talk with several different guests about the State of the Union and President Barack Obama's final State of the Union address that he delivered last night. He said the State of the Union is strong. Do you agree? That's our big question. And we'll welcome your thoughts and your questions and your views at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. First, we will hear from a political scientist a little later this hour. At 6:30, we will welcome in Democratic Congressman Ron Kind. And then after 6:45, we will welcome in Republican Congressman Glenn Grothman. And that's just this hour. And I hope we will welcome in you as well. Let me welcome our first guest. Cecilia Moe is an assistant professor of political science at Vanderbilt University and a W. Glenn Campbell and Rita Ricardo Campbell National Fellow and the Robert Eccles Swain National Fellow at the Hoover Institution at Stanford University. She specializes in comparative political behavior, political psychology, and social policy. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you very much for being with us. Well, what stood out to you about President Obama's final State of the Union address?
I think it was really a celebration in some ways that he took steps to lay out the many reforms that he's proud of and that he's proud of his administration for really accomplishing. In many ways, he was unapologetic about health care reform, steps taken during the period of economic recovery, reforms in the energy sector, and legalizing same-sex marriage in every state. And in the eyes of his supporters, his address probably demonstrated what made him really the right choice, a public servant, an intellectual, and a humble and virtuous leader. But for others, they likely saw a bold, perhaps even combative and polarizing politician.
Yeah. Ahead of the speech, aides to Obama said he would offer an optimistic assessment of the progress made during his tenure and a hopeful roadmap for the future. Do you think he delivered on those?
In many ways, yes. It was this bookend to his tenure as from being a presidential candidate to our president for the last 8 years. He really ended on a message of hope and optimism, the message he ran on, and he was calling for an America that he really wanted when he started his campaign. He called for a country that was culturally, economically, politically, and socially not polarized. But simultaneously, he really called out the, in some ways, apocalyptic, unscientific, and exclusionary rhetoric being espoused by some Republican presidential candidates. And there, that was the more bold steps that he took to really call out what is happening during the current election cycle and certain trends that are appearing that he is viewing as dangerous for the progress of this country.
Yeah. He said he was not going to use the address to necessarily focus entirely on his final year in office or to urge Congress to pass a specific agenda, but he did say he was not giving up on these policies.
I want to go easy on the traditional list of proposals for the year ahead. Don't worry, I've got plenty. From helping students learn to write computer code to personalizing medical treatments for patients, and I will keep pushing for progress on the work that I believe still needs to be done. Fixing a broken immigration system. Protecting our kids from gun violence. Equal pay for equal work. Paid leave. Raising the minimum wage. All these things still matter to hardworking families. They're still the right thing to do. And I won't let up until they get done.
First, do you think they're going to get done?
Well, I think, he was very deliberate at saying that as part of a speech that he cannot take steps alone. So in many ways, it demonstrated a certain maturity and realism about what can and cannot get done, and simultaneously a refusal to believe that things can't be done. He talked about the confidence he had in the American people for a more civil conversation, ones where people can actually listen to each other. And I think he was noting the characteristics and qualities that really need to be demonstrated by the leaders of this country to be able to make those strides. So I think by stating very clearly that he was not done with his agenda, he was saying, I am not done this final year. I have not given up, and I refuse to give up. But I do recognize that there is no way that we can accomplish this as a single party, as a single individual. And he wanted that to be very clear in his message.
What did the approach say to you when he decided that he wouldn't use the address to talk about his legislative agenda, and he did not offer a new list of executive actions for his remaining few months in office?
I think he was really hoping to sort of speak to the tenor that is really at the heart of the election this year, and also being reflective on how it has been difficult to make certain steps. I mean, it was great in some ways to see him note that he had regrets, right? The one regret he noted that he had in his time as president is and has been his inability to really have two sides of the parties, the Republican and Democratic Party, really come together to make progress together, and recognizing that that is really at the heart of being able to make systemic and important changes, that he did not want to have his final year be one where he's unilaterally pushing things along, but rather really calling for the kinds of qualities that can really make the agenda that he's had for the last 7 years be still at the heart of what he wants to try and accomplish during his last year, and his hope that that agenda can be carried forward with the next president.
South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley gave the Republican response to the State of the Union. What did you take away from her response?
I think she gave a really great response. And I think what was fascinating was, I mean, in many ways, she was lockstep with President Obama and her concern about the blatantly exclusionary statements made by candidates like Donald Trump. She really talked about the need to ensure that ethnic, religious minorities, and immigrant populations do feel welcome in this country and are treated like Americans. And that was something that President Obama really focused on as well in his union. He referenced Pope Francis's words that to imitate the hatred and violence of tyrants and murderers is the best way to take their place, and that we really needed to ensure that we were not espousing exclusionary rhetoric that made people in this country feel unwelcome and felt like that there were outsiders that wanted to really be part of the American dream, and that those individuals should not feel unwelcome in this country. And I think it was a really smart move on Governor Haley's part. I'm thinking about some of the research that I'm currently doing with collaborators Neil Malhotra at Stanford University and Alexander Kuo at Cornell University, and we noticed that currently social exclusion is a really important part of party identification. And one of the groups where we're noticing this kind of pattern was when we're studying Asian American voters. In the last 20 years, when we examined their presidential election exit polls, we see that there was this noticeable flip. So 36% of Asian Americans voted for the Republican candidate, the Democratic candidate in 1992, and that completely flipped by 2008, where 73% of Asian Americans were voting for the Democratic candidate. So how does this one group go from 36% to 73%? Going for the Democratic Party in in less than just two decades. And when we're really looking at this group and this erosion that the Republican Party was having with this group, we're noticing that one important piece of the story was a cementing of exclusion with the Republican Party, and that that narrative was really pushing away groups that may otherwise actually be politically more aligned with the Republican Party.
I'm going to jump in because we have news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio coming up next, and then we will continue for a few more minutes talking with Cecilia Moe, an assistant professor of political science at Vanderbilt University. We are talking about the State of the Union. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are asking most of the morning, what do you think of the State of the Union? We are hearing now from a political scientist. Coming up in a few minutes, we will welcome in Democratic Congressman Ron Kind. And after 6:45, Republican Congressman Glenn Grothman joins us. President Obama delivered his final State of the Union address last night, and he said that the State of the Union is strong because of us.
I believe in change because I believe in you, the American people. And that's why I stand here as confident as I have ever been that the state of our union is strong. Thank you.
So do you think the State of the Union is strong? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. And what do you think is good about the State of the Union? What's not so good about the State of the Union? Are you hopeful that the State of the Union will get even stronger, not only in the year to come, but in the years to come? We are talking with our political scientist guest, Cecilia Moe, an assistant professor of political science at Vanderbilt University, and we are welcoming your questions and your comments as well. Professor Moe, we were talking a little bit before news about South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley giving the Republican response. I'm seeing a lot of headlines now of Nikki Haley for vice president. Why did the party select her in particular to give the response, do you think?
I think she was demonstrating more the moderate and so-called establishment Republican. I think she reflected and demonstrated a more inclusive party, a party that could also recognize their own mistakes and that still had the ability to really represent the values they saw were important. So she sort of demonstrated the sensibilities of the party in a great way, and I think when we're looking at the general response that she received even from the opposing side, I mean, her State of the Union was off the charts in terms of how well it was received by Democratic Party voters. And I think the party leadership that selected her to really provide the response was hopeful that that was the effect that she was going to have, and in fact she did. And it's interesting that she's actually being criticized by some conservative commentators.
Yeah, she did. It sounded like when she said the loudest room in the voice isn't necessarily the best way to get things done. It sounded like she was calling out Donald Trump specifically.
Absolutely, which is why, I really did think that in some ways there was this cohesiveness with the State of the Union and this address that actually did demonstrate an ability for the two parties to effectively communicate with one another as the themes were actually much closer together than they were apart. Both she and President Obama were demonstrating humility as it relates to mistakes that their party has made, and simultaneously just noting that it is so absolutely important to be inclusive and welcoming and really have the voices of the unheard Americans be part of the dialogue, and to really start ignoring that loud voice that's really parlaying information that really have people unenthusiastic about being part of the political process and really feeling like they are not part of the social fabric of this country.
Now, President Obama started the State of the Union by complimenting new House Speaker, Wisconsin Congressman Paul Ryan, for helping to get things done with the omnibus spending bill that kept the government functioning. He, though, did direct some critical remarks critiquing the GOP position on big issues, for example, the denial of climate change science. How does this kind of call out help him get things done?
I think he is, you know, as that liberal intellectual, he did want to take this opportunity to really call out the areas in which there needs to be a more productive conversation and a recognition that facts cannot be ignored. It was interesting that for a long period, it did seem like in the address, he was really just noting the mistakes and the real concerns he has with the other side. He was lamenting that those who were talking about the declining American economy were peddlers of fiction. He was noting that 60 years ago, we didn't deny Sputnik was up there, and that we should not be arguing with science. We didn't before, and we shouldn't today, and that that was really going to lead us into an unfruitful path as it relates to having technology work for us and ensuring that the planet that our children inherit is one that actually is the kind of planet that we want to provide for them. He also was really arguing for a proportionate response to terrorists, and that there was a real concern that kind of playing to the over-the-top claims that we're in World War III and that the terrorists are going to ruin this country is really not the response that we should have, and that while, you know, he's taking the issues seriously, that it's dangerous to play into the hands of terrorists and give them too much power in terms of what they're actually able to do, and reassure Americans that despite what Republican candidates are saying in terms of the dangers that we see today, that we are in fact safe. And he reminded Americans that it's inappropriate really to be viewing ISIL as representative of one of the world's largest religions. And I think he was trying to provide just a more welcome environment as it relates to how this country treats its Muslim citizens, and so I think he was really taking steps to call out some of the, I mean, for lack of a better word, lies that are being told on the other side that are making Americans in some way see the world as kind of falling apart, and we have an apocalypse, and he's stating, no, that's not true, and let's be reasonable here, and let's take a step back and look at how the world is actually doing well, and America is doing well. And I think that's why he really wanted to end on a note of optimism, because there's a lot of fear that's being thrown around that are making citizens scared about the conditions of their country and the world.
Yeah. I should leave it at that note of optimism, but I do want to ask, because it was a good chuckle. President Obama said, I'm going to keep this State of the Union short because I know a lot of you want to get back to Iowa to start the presidential campaign.
Yes.
And he, given that it is this 2016 is an election year, I mean, do you have brief thoughts on whether President Obama and Congress are going to be able to get anything done this year?
I think he was noting a hope that something can get done, and recognizing that there are other priorities that are going on, and I think that's part of the reason why he chose to give the kind of speech that he gave, which was one that noted sort of humility, that I can't get this done by myself, but reminding Americans and his fellow electeds that it is so important to keep moving the important issues of today forward and to not just press pause, because the world is not pausing until the election cycle takes place. So it was sort of a mix of we can't stop, but simultaneously recognizing and putting in some realism that he can't do this by himself.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Cecilia Moen is an assistant professor of political science at Vanderbilt University. Moving on now, as we continue our reaction and analysis of the State of the Union address, we welcome in Ron Kind, a Democratic U.S. representative from Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District, and we will welcome your questions for him and your responses to the State of the Union, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Congressman Kind, good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Go Pack.
Yeah, go Packers. So let's
hope that the state of the Packer offense is growing stronger.
Well, that
as
was
approach this weekend.
That was we certainly saw it's what did I see, the return of the offense, in a Star Wars kind of analogy.
Yeah, that's good.
What is your reaction to President Obama's State of the Union address?
You know, it was very good, and it was kind of expected. This was more of a macro theme. It wasn't a litany of a bunch of legislative priorities that he wanted to get accomplished. They were broader themes. It really, when I was sitting there, it kind of echoed the Four Freedoms speech that FDR gave. He set up 4 questions. He gave his answer, his perspective of where we are as a nation. And it was certainly a more upbeat, hopeful, more optimistic message than what the American people are hearing out on the campaign trail with the litany of candidates who just see all the negative and all the dark and all the doom. And I think it was uplifting. This was also a president that definitely wants to break the tape. He doesn't want to just sit around and do nothing this next year. And he posed a challenge to work with Congress and get certain things done before he's finished.
Yeah. So what would you like to see President Obama focus on in the remaining months in office?
Well, there are some areas of common ground. I mean, criminal justice reform, there's a lot of bipartisan consensus surrounding that. We have a higher education bill trying to increase access and affordability for higher education for our students. We have the opportunity to write the rules of trade rather than trying to trade in this competitive global environment with no rules at all or possibly with China's rules dominating. We have a Pacific trade agreement now that has been negotiated and it's pending before us for our consideration. So there are certain tangible things that we can still get done. Of course, he spent a lot of time talking about the rise and threat of ISIS and his response to it. And I agree that the challenge there is how do we, as a nation, still enhance our security, provide the leadership globally, but without becoming the world's policeman and putting the 82nd or the 101st Airborne Division right smack in the middle of a Sunni-Shia civil war that's been raging in the Middle East for centuries, as some are calling to do. So there were some important points that he wanted to make, but he also wanted to remind us of who we are as a nation, the identity of us as a people, and that's one that rises to challenge. It's one that doesn't always see the dark clouds on the horizon. Each generation goes through these periods of self-doubt, but each preceding generation has always risen and adapted and evolved and took on those challenges as a nation, and we need to today as well. But he also was more specific about certain electoral reform, redistricting process, the big money in politics, you know, making it easier for people to participate in this democracy rather than putting up roadblocks. So, you know, these were all sort of macro themes that he wanted to get across last night.
Let me follow up on a couple specifics there. President Obama called, as he has for before, for the closing of the prison at Guantanamo Bay in Cuba. And I know your colleague, Congressman Glenn Grothman, who we will have on in just a few minutes, released a release last night saying that he was disappointed to hear some of these plans, said that closing Guantanamo Bay would be, you know, dangerous. Do you see this happening this time? And what do you think about the closing
Guantanamo? You know, it's an interesting issue because it perplexes me, Joy. Why there's such an ardent desire to keep Gitmo open and the symbol or whatever. But I think the president's correct. This has become a symbol of opposition and recruitment against us globally, especially with a variety of terrorist groups. And we prosecute terrorists all the time in U.S. domestic courts, and we're very good at it. We have a very good record of being able to bring them to justice through our criminal justice system here in the United States, and we will continue doing that. But one way or the other, Gitmo is going to be closed. And right now the president is looking for more opportunities to repatriate some of these individuals who have been sitting there for 14 years with no due process, with no trial pending. and sending them to countries that can monitor them and keep tabs on them. But I really am just scratching my head wondering why there's this virulent opposition to closing Gitmo, given the potency that the issue has given terrorist groups around the world.
Also, the president did tout the Trans-Pacific Partnership, as you referenced, says that this was one of the victories of U.S. leadership in this past year, and he urged Congress to approve the agreement. I know that this has been a controversial move, but it's one that you have backed, and you helped get Democratic support for that partnership. What lies ahead for it?
Well, obviously, it's a big document. A lot of people, including myself, are still going through the terms and the chapters of the agreement, making sure that it does make sense for our folks in Wisconsin and throughout the nation and that. But here's the more macro message there, Joy. We're trading with the rest of the world already. We're already trading with these nations that over the last few years we've been negotiating this agreement with. And we will be trading with them tomorrow. The question is what the rules of trade are going to look like. And we have the ability, through this agreement, to establish the rules ourselves, to elevate standards to where we are with core labor and environmental and human rights standards that are fully enforceable for the first time in a trade agreement. Otherwise, it's a race to the bottom. Otherwise, we're going to continue to trade with Brunei and Malaysia and Vietnam with no rules at all and no ability to enforce violations of slave and child labor and other core principles that we believe in as a nation. And again, it's a decision for us whether we want to recoil, you know, pull up the drawbridge and become very isolationist and pretend that we can compete globally on that basis, or whether we're going to engage and provide the leadership in establishing the global trading system ourselves, because other nations would love to do it, especially China right now in that region would love to establish the terms of trade on their turf, on their list of priorities. And that, I submit, would leave us in a much worse competitive position going forward.
Tom in Port Wing joins us. Hi, Tom.
Good morning, Joy.
Morning. Go ahead.
Okay, my question is, or my comment is this. The president touted two victories that he had, which was Obamacare and the legalization of homosexual marriage. And then later on, he tried to give us a lesson in democracy. And these two things, Obamacare, which was had not one Republican vote, and it was brought to us by the reconciliation process, and gay marriage, where 34 states voted, 32 voted no, and then the Supreme Court stepped in. He touted these as examples of the democratic process, but they were the worst examples we've ever had of the democratic process.
Tom, thank you. But Congressman Kine, we just have a couple of minutes, but what's your response to that?
Well, doing big things is very, very difficult today, given the intense hyperpartisanship and the huge polarization that has divided our nation. And that, too, is one of the things that the president lamented. Clearly, you know, the status quo with health care was taking us to a very bad place. I've never claimed that the Affordable Care Act is a perfect answer to the complexity of the healthcare system, but it is effectuating a lot of important change, and I think improving the healthcare system so more people have access is more affordable, but also we're changing the way it's delivered and how we're paying for it to get better value out of the dollars that are spent. So this will be an ongoing debate, but again, it's just one of those recurring themes that just shows how deeply divided our nation has become in the political sphere. And it doesn't have to be this difficult. It doesn't have to be this hard. There are areas of common ground that I'm convinced that can draw us together as a nation. And healthcare is going to be one of those issues. We're going to have to learn what's working and what isn't and have the ability to make changes and adjustments along the way.
And we'll leave it there. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Ron Kind is a Democratic U.S. representative from Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. It includes western and southwestern Wisconsin. We are going to check news from Wisconsin Public Radio and National Public Radio, and then we will return and get another perspective on the State of the Union. We will welcome in another congressman from the state of Wisconsin, Glenn Grothman, a Republican U.S. representative from the state's 6th Congressional District, will join us after the news. And you can, too, 1-800-642-1234. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. What do you think the State of the Union is? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We have been talking with different guests throughout the hour. First, a political scientist. Next, a Democratic congressman from Wisconsin, Ron Kind. Now, a Republican congressman from Wisconsin will join us with his take on the State of the Union. President Barack Obama delivered his final State of the Union address last night. He thought that the State of the Union was strong because of us. He believed in you and me. He also said that the next president was going to have to face four major areas. And let's take a listen to that.
So let's talk about the future. And four big questions that I believe we as a country have to answer, regardless of who the next president is or who controls the next Congress. First, how do we give everyone a fair shot at opportunity and security in this new economy? Second, how do we make technology work for us and not against us, especially when it comes to solving urgent challenges like climate change? Third, how do we keep America safe and lead the world without becoming its policeman? And finally, how can we make our politics reflect what's best in us and not what's worst?
1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let me welcome our next guest. Glenn Grothman is a Republican U.S. representative from Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District, which represents East Central Wisconsin. Good morning.
Glad to be on the show, Joy.
It's good to have you back with us. So what is your take, what did you make of President Obama's State of the Union address?
Well, I was glad that he wants to kind of do a little more healing. I think he's been a divisive president, and it'd be good in the final year if we kind of got back to working together, which I think is a good goal. I'm not sure I would share his ideas as to what the new president is going to be faced with. I mean, I'm on the budget committee just this week. We were briefed on, you know, the massive, you know, $18 trillion debt that he's leaving us, and obviously the new president is going to have to deal with that massive debt and find a way to balance the budget the way Barack Obama didn't. I do think we have a problem abroad. I mean, in the last 8 years, I don't care what you're talking about, Syria or Libya or Iraq, things are a lot more chaotic, a lot more dangerous, and the new president is going to have to clean that up. So I think those are, and of course, we continue to have the breakdown of the family, and, you know, now we control welfare state, more and more people taking advantage of public benefits. Those are the things that the new president's going to have to deal with. Barack Obama didn't touch on them, but I think in a bipartisan effort, we have to look at common ground. I was glad to see Barack Obama brought up drug abuse, particularly the heroin scourge. So far, we haven't done a good job of securing our southern border. Heroin is very cheap in the country for that reason. And hopefully in this final year, Barack Obama can throw out some proposals to Congress, or Congress can throw some proposals out, just how to deal with this heroin problem and see if we can make a sincere effort at closing that southern border.
I know that you issued a press release after the final State of the Union address where you said you were disappointed to hear several dangerous plans laid out in the president's speech, including his proposal to close Guantanamo Bay and transfer dangerous militant Islamic terrorists into facilities located on the U.S. mainland, etc. We asked Congressman Ron Kind about that concern, and he said he just doesn't get it. He says Guantanamo is going to close, and these suspects will be sent to countries that can monitor them.
Right, we just don't want them in the United States.
Yeah, I guess, but he so what? I mean, you're not.
I think in the past there's a fear that terrorists have been let loose. And I think, you know, we know when a terrorist in Guantanamo Bay that they're not going to cause a problem. And it's fine, therefore, to keep them down there.
I'm not sure I understand. So you're saying that you're okay with closing of Guantanamo as long as the suspects that are detained there are sent to other countries?
No. I think it is a good place to keep down there because we are keeping an eye on them. Actually, they did not wind up in some other countries, wind up being back terrorists to American citizens again someday. So I think it's a good thing to keep Guantanamo open.
We have a listener on Twitter who says the country is on the verge of collapse. That's his assessment of the State of the Union. He cites the federal debt, among other reasons, something that he says President Obama didn't mention last night. Is this something Congress needs to better address?
Oh, no question. And I was surprised President Obama did not bring it up last night. When he's talking about things the next president's going to have to deal with, the first thing the president's going to have to deal with is an out-of-control budget and $18 trillion debt. Now, maybe President Obama didn't bring it up because he doesn't think it's important. I mean, obviously, it wasn't a priority for him, but it is going to have to be a priority for the next president. And you look at so many of our programs, Medicare, Medicaid, costs just going up incrementally, that it is something a new president's going to have to take on. It's unfortunate, too, because you always don't like to say no to spending, and it would have been helpful if President Obama in his last budget would have addressed these difficult issues, because after all, he's not running for re-election, but he decided not to address them last night.
Yeah. The president did say food stamps didn't cause the financial crisis. Wall Street recklessness did. What was your reaction to that?
Well, of course, the financial crisis was caused by the government encouraging people to take out loans they shouldn't take out loans, or banks to give loans that shouldn't have been giving out loans. We still have that problem out there. Banks are still kind of encouraged to give loans to people who shouldn't get loans. Of course, it was a bipartisan problem. I think the Democrats are out in front pushing it, but George Bush, who's not at all the best Republican president, also leaned on banks to give out loans with nothing down, and that's where the crisis came from. We are having a bigger and bigger crisis on public benefits, people adapting lifestyles in which they aren't working. And that's going to be a variety of problems. The biggest problem I always think about is the children and the degree to which we are right now encouraging parents to raise children in what I suppose I'll call a welfare lifestyle. And that causes a wide variety of problems as well. But President Obama is right. Government meddling in the banking sector is what caused the financial crisis. And I just have to make sure that doesn't happen again.
The president also touted the Trans-Pacific Partnership and urged Congress to approve the agreement. We talked with Representative Kind, who supports that, though he's still examining the deal in full. What do you think? Do you think Congress should pass the TPP?
Well, we'll have to look at it yet. As you know, it's a very, very long agreement. I think public statements have indicated it's not something we're going to be voting on in the next 6 months, but eventually we're going to have to look at it in depth. It's unfortunate that so many economic decisions in the future are being made in these sort of agreements. On the other hand, I did vote for the framework by which Barack Obama did negotiate that agreement, and we're going to have to look at it in depth. Like I said, it's a very long agreement that I don't think we're going to be voting on anytime in at least the next 6 months.
Yeah. What did you think of the Republican response to the State of the Union from South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley?
Well, I think she's got a great future in the Republican Party. I think we may see her on a national stage sometime.
Sometime? Do you think that she might be a vice presidential candidate in 2016?
I think some people are talking about it. It wouldn't shock me.
Yeah. Which other Republican candidates for president are you leaning toward?
I haven't picked anybody yet. Obviously, we have a wide variety of people out there. I think the things to look at for any potential primary voters, how are they going to deal with the debt? How are they going to deal with the what I call the welfare crisis, breakdown of the family? Are they going to sincerely deal with immigration? You know, we can't have a repeated George Bush out there. And how are they going to deal with foreign affairs? You know, we don't want somebody who's going to go overboard in pushing the American troops abroad. So I think those are the issues you have to look at before you decide who to vote for.
Yeah. Travis on Facebook says, the State of the Union is pathetic. We don't win anymore. We just got lectured by the president about who we are. He acts as though he just took office and is calling for change that he was already supposed to deliver. You want to react to that?
Well, like I said, obviously there are problems. I mean, people see a growing welfare state that has to be turned around. Every country has immigration laws. It doesn't seem like we're doing a sincere job of enforcing our laws. And we have a government that's not balancing the budget. And the new president's got to deal with all those things. And I think I wish Barack Obama would have acknowledged these problems in his final speech, but decided not to highlight them.
Yeah. So how much do you expect President Obama and Congress to accomplish together in his last year in office?
Well, I think there's potential for some good things. Like I said, I was glad he brought up the drug problem, the heroin problem, and so much of that heroin is coming from south of our border. I hope he is sincere about that because it's affected so many people, and even though it's been publicized, it's still an under-publicized problem. So insofar as I have a chance to be with any Barack Obama's representatives in the next couple weeks, I am going to bring that up with him and see what we can do about that.
Yeah. And I appreciate you being with us, Congressman Grothman. Sounds like you are struggling with a cold or some laryngitis right now, so we appreciate your time.
Always glad to be on the show, Joy. Yeah. It's great to talk to the erudite listeners from Wisconsin Public Radio.
I missed that, so thank you for saying that. Glenn Grothman, a Republican U.S. representative from the state's 6th Congressional District, which is a good part of East Central Wisconsin. Before this, we heard from Ron Kind, a Democratic U.S. representative from Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. And before that, we heard from Cecilia Moe, who is an assistant professor of political science at Vanderbilt University, all giving us their take on the State of the Union. And our State of the Union coverage will continue in our Big Question segment coming up in our next hour. We will welcome in two opposing perspectives, two guests from different political viewpoints, and we invite you to weigh in on the big question. How do you describe the State of the Union? Join us after the news. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.